from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net bonus podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Welcome to Bonus Show 72. This is officially the show that is under the new patron wall, man.
Which means nobody's listening to it.
I know. Because it's only going to be listened to in like 5 weeks.
Yeah, everybody is still trying to figure out. No one knows how this whole rigmarole of switching over is going to work. Oh, well. Yeah, if you're hearing this, I guess it worked.
It worked. I thought about the irony of explaining to everybody how that works, but that doesn't make any sense. That's for the next show. That's for the show that you'll probably hear before this one.
Well, look, if you've just logged on to The Good Atheist to get your show rather than doing it in the feed, there should be a new feed somewhere that we're telling you about on the site saying, here's the new feed, so just keep an eye out for that. You'll be fine.
Yeah. We'll guide you along nicely. You won't have to worry. You can put your feet up in your iTunes. It's just that it works a little bit differently than it used to, that's all. But it's still going to be the same old good stuff. And the cool thing, too, is that we now have an option, the Silver Membership, which is where I put some of the shows that I want to give out for free occasionally and that kind of stuff, you know, just to entice people who don't necessarily want to pay yet, but who think to themselves, I need a little bit more radio. I need more radio!
Well, it's just an excuse to get you guys to sign up and start, you know, commenting and stuff.
To be participate.
Exactly. Register for the website. Get some free crap. There you go.
Cool. It's pretty cool. I got a letter. As I said before, I like usually to start the bonus shows with letters that people write in, because they always kind of have interesting things to say. But there's more to it than that. It's also, I guess, I get to think about somebody else who's listening out there, you know? Because for the most part, you put your stuff out there, you kind of forget about it. You don't know who's listening to you. You don't really know what they do. And once in a while, we get like a letter, say, some soldiers in Afghanistan that are just like, hey, give us a shout-out. And you're just like, that's fucking crazy, man.
We go on midnight Afghani hunts listening to your podcast. It's crazy.
And then you have this sort of like a father and son who listen together, and the son's getting all these atheist arguments, so he's verbally lambasting his Christian counterparts. So that's like a family thing. We got another couple that listen to the show when they do their coupley routine of cooking and who knows what. They're just like, let's turn on the old podcast.
I can see how that would work.
Yeah, and then there's all the people who listen to us, and I have to imagine this is the fucking vast majority, though, are the commuters and the gym enthusiasts.
Well, figure any point in time where you've got like, you know, an hour where you're not completely absorbed, you got a little bit of extra brain power you can spend around, and you need to add something in there that makes you not feel like you're going crazy.
Well, that's the letter that I received. So I'll read it to you, because there's a couple things I want to talk about this particular letter. It begins with, I never wrote back your initial message welcoming me to the site, which I really should have because it's so unusual to get a personal message these days. Which, by the way, the personal messages will be gone. It's automated now. Anyways, just wanted to say hi. I'll definitely be resubscribing when the time comes, and I've listened to every single podcast. It got me through the summer when my commute to work was about an hour and a half each way, because taking the bus to work is awesome.
I remember back when I lived in Ottawa, everywhere was an hour and a half by bus.
Well, an hour and a half was pretty much the amount of time that it took me. Remember when I had to take that job a couple months ago to just make ends meet? I'm sure everybody will remember my stressed out show.
The constant bitching about it.
The constant bitching about it. That was also another 3.5 hours. Or I'm sorry, 1.5 hours each way. But I didn't spend it listening to me.
I listened to me enough.
Yeah, I listened to me enough. Okay, it goes on. I know that you talk about rapture craziness, but I sure would like to hear some more about it in the future. Not to get too weird and personal with someone I don't know, but as I'm sure many people tell you, on some level I feel like I know you from having listened to so many hours of your thoughts and reactions to what goes on in the news, largely in my country. Now, I just want to pause it for 5 seconds here, because I do want to mention, this is something that I occasionally think about, And it's never quite clear, but how much of me really is out there? That's the question I got to wonder. Like, how much of my own personality would you say that people are able to grasp and know? Because to some degree, obviously, the persona that I have in The Good Atheist, my outspoken self, whatever, how close is it to what the real Jacob is, generally speaking, you would say, if you had to guess?
Yeah, it's pretty similar. There's very little put on top of our whole shticks.
Probably more loudness and a bit more enthusiasm when talking.
Pretty much.
I'll be more laid back usually, but not always. Get a few beers in me, I'll probably get worse. But the point is, I guess you never really think about all the personal things that you've said or the details, the intimate details really that just come out of my mouth, because I'm not a kind of person that has really any secrets whatsoever. It's just not in my nature. And that might be shocking to some people, you know what I mean? Like, just utterly, how can you tell someone some of these details? To which I just answered, well, and maybe this is an egotistical thing on my end, but
it probably is. You are quite egotistical.
But I do like the idea of other people, maybe even, you know, folks that are essentially strangers, still knowing who I am and even to some degree caring. I mean, it's kind of nice when you think about it. I mean, how many people have that opportunity? And I cherish it. Like, honestly, I think it's... I like the fact that I'm out there, but I'm out there as myself. And everybody when people write, usually they get it. They're pretty close on the money. So I feel at least I've been genuine enough. And that's probably the reason why most people listen. You know, remember I always have conversations about trust and how that works? Well, to some degree, trust is earned when a person has revealed at least things to you. You ever notice that when you sit with someone and they're really open about themselves, you kind of feel like you want to be open about yourself too? It's because you're playing a trust game. They're entrusting you with information about themselves, and they expect you to do the same, because you're kind of hardwired to do it. And the crazy thing is, it feels good, so long as the trust is not violated. You know, when trust remains strong, everybody fucking feels happy.
Unfortunately, it's very hard for us to violate other people's trust just through this radio show. Unless, of course, we talk about somebody who's listening to the show. I have that worry every so often. If one of my friends is like, I listen to the show, it's like, wait, did I ever talk shit about this person? No, I didn't.
Yeah,
okay.
It's true. You hope at least... I mean, we've said so many things, it's really difficult for anybody to probably remember. And who knows? Maybe we have talked shit about people that actually listen, but we wouldn't know.
All the fans of The Good Atheists are SOBs.
I love that. How many times are you going to say that?
All the time. It's my go-to joke.
It's true. And and I'm sure that it makes everybody feel that much warmer. You betrayed their trust, Ryan. Mm. But, yeah, I guess you're right. To some degree, we benefit from that whole, it's a one-side equation of trust, which kind of puts me in an advantageous position, which is why I charge money and I don't pay you guys to listen to the show. That I'm exploiting you. But I think it's a fair deal. We record lots of bonus shows. And
Very late at night. It is 10 minutes to midnight,
my friend. We've had a bit of a long night. I wanted to make the site work with the membership right when this got up. And the thing is, I must be an idiot, because I always really underestimate the amount of time it takes to do things. So that was a bit of an underestimation.
Computer stuff is the kind of thing that feels like it should take an evening and then ends up taking a week.
It takes your whole life.
But that's not the only reason the show is late. The other reason it's late is because we were supposed to be talking about existence, and we were supposed to have a listener-driven discussion about their ideas or their feelings or their reasons for existence. But unfortunately, you just put it, when you put up a post saying, hey, here's where you guys talk about existence, you weren't very...
I was not very specific.
Yeah, and let me tell you what. Just saying, here people, say something about existence. It's a pretty broad topic.
Do you know what the problem is?
Write a book or three?
Here's the problem with that. It's kind of like getting everybody to go to a field. You show up there. You drop a ball in the middle of the field. And you're like, have fun. Play whatever game. Right? No one's going to play anything, because you have to kind of set up rules. You have to give it a structure, you know, put some nets, have definite position. But just showing up with a ball doesn't mean the game's going to start. So I understand that. I didn't set up the game.
It wasn't a fun-sounding game.
It was not a fun-sounding game. I apologize for that. We'll do another show on those very... on this topic. I'll put it in a little bit more thought. To be fair, though, like I said, trying to do side stuff. You know, it's like the behind-the-scenes shits that you don't see. that always cause frustration.
We're spinning lots of plates.
Lots of plates, but so far it's working. Oh. So, now, just to go back to the email before we move on, because it was asking us to talk about Rapture, and the writer of the email had another, had a reason why they wanted to talk about it, and it was basically because she was still partial to the message of Rapture. I don't know if I want to say partial, but just that it must be difficult to detach yourself from certain traditions. And Christianity is traditions. You know, going to church is a kind of tradition. Having that structure, having that identity is part of that tradition. And I can understand that people sometimes tell me, I don't really believe in that stuff, but it still gets to me.
Still gets to you how?
Well, you know, you
like
talk to
people... Like the
spirit
of Christmas or something?
No, see, that would be a positive thing. But typically when folks talk about, say, the fact that rapture gets to them, or the fact that, you know, people talking about hell gets to them, is because they used to have real physical reactions to these things, and those don't go away.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
You know, when you have... the memory was real, it's just the place wasn't. But we can create our own mental prisons. I know that there's lots of fucking people listening to this show that experience that, maybe.
So this listener used to have, like, she used to think about raptures and it was a real thing.
Yeah, exactly. Huh. And then eventually, saw that this kind of thing is just baloney from a wise grandfather. You know, you always get one of those in the family. Somebody's like, what the fuck you talking about, buddy? What the fuck you talking about? And they're probably unusually smart. That's probably the thing about them. Gee, they're so smart. Yeah, but oh, they don't believe in God. Be careful when you talk to Grandpa Pete. He's got some wild ideas.
He was in the war. He doesn't believe in anything anymore.
He was all twisted. Okay, here's what we're going to talk about on the show today. Two topics. The first topic is we're going to talk about more studies coming out of Germany just indicating a massive cover-up and priestly abuse, and we'll also be talking about Ratzinger's brother, who sounds like a real sack of shit.
Is it his brother or his grandfather?
Brother? No, it's his brother. It's his older brother. This is not, like, these are not young men, all right? These are old dudes. His dad. You're hilarious. Okay, the other thing we're going to be talking about is quack medicine claiming another life. I wrote an article about this, but I want to keep talking about it because there's so much to talk about, and we're going to expound on a woman who had basically decided to do this alternate therapy rather than, you know, get actually surgery and chemotherapy for her cancer. And 3 years later, she's dead. So she died, I think, yesterday, so we're going to be talking about that. I guess it's technically 2 days ago because we're doing this so damn late.
Mm.
That's going to be our second topic of conversation. So I want to jump into the first one right away, the German study that was being conducted. Essentially, this is the Archdiocese of Munich in Freising. I guess that's a city.
Freising.
I don't know how it's pronounced. Fuck off, Germany. So they asked basically a lawyer to conduct a study. His name is Marion Westfall. And his duty was basically to collect all the data, all the documents the churches in Germany had, to see if he could uncover what exactly had happened. And what did he discover? Well, he discovered that a significant portion of everything had been destroyed. So really, there's not much to the study, be honest with you.
Well, no, the study has some pretty fucking crazy... Listen to these numbers. 26 priests they found... that were straight up convicted of sexual.
Right.
These are the ones that they knew about. On top of this, they found evidence that 17 other priests were sexually molesting kids. And those are just, you know how they were talking about, there was a bunch of evidence missing and a whole bunch of documentary gaps and everything else like that.
Huge.
Even with all that, they still found 17 more. Examples where it seemed like a priest was, and I'm not talking 17 more priests, not 17 more examples. It's a bit difficult because there's so many of these. And then 159 priests, 15 deacons, 96 religious teachers, and 6 pastoral employees. They found evidence that they seriously assaulted kids.
So
over the course of, this is over the course of 50 years in one area. It's not even all of Germany. It's the Archdiocese of Munich and Freising, man. It's just, it's one of the dioceses in Germany.
Yeah.
It might be a gigantic one, but I don't care.
And funny enough, one of those was under Ratzinger's care from 1977 to 1982, which is when the biggest gap of missing documents occurs.
Those years.
That
whole time period where, everything almost seemed perfectly fine.
So, you know, that whole question, did Ratzinger know about abuse and blah, blah, blah. The other crazy thing, though, is another article, because I was just trying to uncover more stuff about, the scandal in Germany, because it's not huge news around here. You know, you have to dig for that shit.
Yeah, pretty much the only, whenever these kinds of abuse things happen, it's usually kind of local. It stays within the country that it happened.
Which is outrageous, because we should all be made aware of the systematic fucking shuffling of molesters by the Catholic Church. I mean, that's it. That's what they did. We know this. We don't, you know what we don't know? We don't know the scale. And I mean that in a way that we probably even underestimate the real scale of abuse here.
But think about this. Between 50 years in this one place, 26 were convicted, 17 more they found evidence of, and they're making the assumption that there was a hell of a lot more going on than they found because of all the gaps. That's a pretty damn high number. How ridiculous is that?
Well, this is the second part that I wanted to talk about, which is when I was digging and I found an old article back in March. And what it was talking about was Ratzinger's older brother. It was like this octogenarian called George Ratzinger, I guess. And he directed this famed choir. I'm going to butcher it here. Here we go. Regensburger.
Yeah, try and say it with a funny German accent. So
Regensburger Doppensinn, or whatever.
Not bad.
That's as good as it's going to get. And so he was the director from 1964 to 1994. And there was a huge controversy because there were all these allegations of abuse and that kind of stuff that had happened under his watch. Ratzinger even admitted to slapping around boys. He's just like, oh, yes, I did it. But I felt terrible about it at the time. But I wasn't, also he says, I wasn't aware of any necessarily sexual shit going on. But this one guy who was a former choir boy, so that's going to be good, said that he couldn't have possibly been unaware of what was going on, because he said that part of the punishment, the sadistic punishments, involved this weird sexual component to it. So it's not just abuse as in I'm going to kick you in the face. It's like sexual humiliation, where they would routinely smack, their ass and shit like that, What's the name of that guy we always... Desmond Morris style. But the whole idea was this painful humiliation, because this is what these priests, these sick fuckers, were lusting after. This was some hot shit going down, you know? Some dom crap that is basically, it's like, hey, do you want to wear a little collar around your neck and then you can have all the dom sex you want with boys? This is the kind of shit that's going down there, and everyone's like, no, never happened. What are you talking about? Oh, the documents? Oh, mysteriously vanished, and we don't know where they are.
Well, even if the sexual assault isn't bad enough, like the general assault, like the treatment of the kids by these priests, was pretty horrendous. The kinds of stories that you hear about how they would take, like, meter sticks and just beat the fuck out of them. It was some serious stuff. There was a movie I downloaded. I mean, I watched legally. I legally watched this movie about the abuses that used to go on in Ireland towards, like, orphan girls and just generally all the girls that got sent to the church to take care of because they got pregnant or because they were disobedient or whatever the other reasons were. And man, these women, when Sinead O'Connor ripped up that picture of the Pope, a lot of it wasn't so much the sexual side, it's just the straight-up abuse side, where it's just unbelievable the kind of things that these people... They would beat these women to death. Like, literally just beat them to death and then bury them in the backyard.
Yep. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the moral superiority of religion. You can stop clapping now. They've received enough admiration. They've received so much, in fact, that they still go around saying, well, how can you possibly be moral without us? It's a fucking miracle that anyone was moral with you. I think it's a testament to just how amazingly moral individuals can be, despite the systematic misogyny, cruelty of religion. Like, it really takes good to compensate for that shit.
Well, here's a question for you. It might be a little bit of a sidetrack, but I think you'll enjoy it. Remember, like, those 500 years where the church was in charge and it was quite horrible? It was called the Middle Ages?
Yeah, that time.
Do you think that everything sucked because the church was in charge, or everything sucked because it was 500 years ago? You know what I mean? Like, are we really... It's like we blame religion for this when it could really just be that we were a barbaric society.
No. The problem really was that they went backwards technologically. Like, the church instituted a kind of huge boycott of any books that they deemed to be heretical, which included most of the stuff from the Greek philosophers and early thinkers. The people that had been pioneers, that had figured out the fucking... size of the planet in way before, you know, like something in the first century AD, Eurostephanes, I don't remember his fucking name, but he found out the fucking circumference of this planet, and you know, it contradicts with the Bible. Let's burn it. And you know, it's no coincidence that the strongest civilization at the time was the you know, Arabs, who had basically saved those manuscripts, and they continued the work that had been done by the Greeks. They named more. There are more constellations that have Arabic names than Greek names. And then what happened? Well, the Crusades happened, and all of a sudden they brought back all of this, you know, all this new thought and technology from the Muslim world, and then finally do they wash away the centuries of ignorance brought to you by religion. It's just that fucking simple. Anybody can just say, oh no, it was a great time, there was intellectual debate about religion at the time. No, okay, the bullshit. Sure, it happened. Wow, they had intense discussions about their own dogma. What a great fucking period of time in human thought. Really, really worked out well. And what do we notice during those times? Things like the goddamn Inquisition. What a surprise, too, because when you take the fucking Bible literally and it says, kill witches, what are you going to think? Kill fucking witches. And then you see witchcraft all around you because you're crazy superstitious. Danger. Element of danger. And then add to that the brilliance. In the time of the Inquisition, when there was a financial incentive to fucking declare your neighbor as a witch, you would get half of their possession if they were found guilty, which they always were, and the church would get the other half of all the assets. So, yeah, the church literally got rich burning widows. That's your moral institution, everybody. Yes. Let's fucking pray to them. They know what they're fucking talking about.
All right, they don't burn us.
Well, they might, you know. The tides could change. Why do we think that we'll live... Oh, we're in a secular age now. We'll always be in a secular age. Yeah. I like your enthusiasm. I hope it's true. Otherwise, we're fucking toast at the Good Atheist. Maybe we're writing it sweet now. It might not stay sweet. We're taking a risk. All right, you want to move on?
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about this woman by the name of Kim Tinkham. And the reason I want to talk about her is because I was on that blog, Science-Based Medicine. If you guys don't remember it, a few shows back, I think it's episode 106, we talked about the Laurent Trottier Science Symposium on pseudoscience that I had attended. I don't know if you remember that show.
Yeah.
And there was one guy, his name is Dr. David Gorski, who I said looked pretty much like the dude from ER, the guy with the glasses. And he's basically an oncologist, and that's what he fights quackery when it comes to specifically breast cancer treatment. Because as you might recall, you know, women are more religious and more susceptible to woo-woo ideas statistically. Sorry, ladies, it's the truth. And it seems to center really strongly around health issues and more primarily on the whole breast cancer deal, because that's a mostly women-only disease. Say mostly. There are men who die of breast cancer.
Are my breasts large enough for me to be worried?
Well, yeah, maybe.
I'm not feeling anything.
Well, you're not.
And
any,
I do squeeze
you're not
them
in the
quite
risk
a lot.
Age group. Mm-hmm. You know, breast cancer is primarily something that happens to older women. Mm. But most of the focus gets put on younger women who get it because their stories are more appealing emotionally to us, and we assume it's some kind of great killer of young women. In reality, actually, heart disease is what kills most women. And we don't give a shit about heart attacks. When's the last time you watched a fucking movie where a woman had a heart attack?
Well, you know, I generally think that to a large degree, people kind of feel like heart attacks are your own fault when you get them.
It's true, eh? It's like the one thing that everybody blames you for. You're like, oh, you probably had a heart attack because you didn't take care of yourself. God, you suck. You fucking suck. So, yeah, breast cancer is a huge deal. He fights the kind of woo-woo that literally gets women killed. This is the really important thing, too, because this is why I like him. This is why I like his site and why I encourage you to visit and, you know, participate or tell people about it. Is the reason that this is the good fight here. You know, when we're talking about fighting pseudoscience, this is where it does the most fucking harm. And the reason I say this also is because Kim Tinkham appeared on Oprah back when she decided to not go for conventional treatments. Maybe I should explain the story. You still think I should explain the story?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, Kim in 2007 was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. Now she goes over to her doctor. Doctor says we need to have surgery almost immediately. You need to follow that up with chemotherapy and radiation. This is the standard operating procedure for how you deal with breast cancer. And depending on what stage you're at, there are various degrees of, the survival rates. Stage 2, I think it's like 85%. Stage 1 is like 90-some-odd percent.
Stage 3 was 60%.
Stage 3 was about 60%. But that's including everything. Right? As you may remember if you had listened to the last show, the way that it works is that the best, nothing heals like surgical steel, which is what that catchphrase I can't get the fuck out of my head. It's awesome. And that will account for a big majority of all the, you know, treatment that you get. That offers you statistically the best chance of survival. Get fucking rid of it.
Surgery.
It's not exactly rocket science here. We can agree that you get rid of the cancer and you've gotten rid of the cancer. And then you follow that up with chemo, and just in case the cancer might come back, because you don't always get it, and after that, boom, you know, you got your... It's hard, and it's painful, and it sucks. And that's the thing that when you read about Kim's story, you realize that she was scared. You know, this is a normal thing for people to be scared, and by stage 3, it's getting serious.
Well, they were gonna take her breast. They were going to take her right boob.
Yeah, mastectomy, I think it's called. Anyways, they were going to take the boob. And if you understand this whole scene, if you will, you understand that a huge reason that women decide to go for alternative treatment is because they are afraid of losing their womanhood. All right, breast cancer for them is a humiliation. If you have to get rid of a breast, then they won't feel like a woman anymore. It's like a guy saying, "Would you like to lose a testicle? How would you fucking feel about that?" Right? It plays into your own image of your sexuality.
You know, we all pretend that we wouldn't mind, but we all knew that guy with one ball back in high school.
But he was awesome. He managed to make that ball work twice as hard.
But it was in the back of our minds. We all knew we had one ball.
Fine. It will be on people's minds. And you know what? It's not like to say, oh, there are no consequences, or you won't get weird faces, or people won't treat you differently the rest of your life as though you're some kind of victim. Sure, those are all elements that are fucking part of it. Cancer's no joke, and it's going to alter your life forever. The problem with Kim is that her fear really made her decide not to listen to her doctor. So the first doctor says, fucking surgery and, you know, the rigmarole. Second doctor says the same thing. Third doctor says the same thing. She's just, at this point now, though, she decides that she's going to Google alternatives to this scary outcome. And sure enough, she finds two things which convince her that she can seek an alternative. The first is the movie The Secret. And the second is a book called The PH Miracle by a dude by the name of Robert Young. We'll talk about him a little bit. And after getting those two sources, she decides, okay, well, I don't need to get surgery. I'm just going to change my diet, and I'm going to use the power of positive thinking to get rid of this cancer. And she was in an infomercial, actually, for Robert Young, who was trying to peddle his fucking piece of shit book.
Well, first off, she was on Oprah.
She was on Oprah.
That was the big deal, because she wrote to Oprah and said, I'm going to use The Secret to cure this. And to her credit, and we shit on Oprah a lot.
We do shit on her a lot.
Because she's the queen of woo, and I can't even imagine the number of women
that
she
has caused.
Yeah, really. Seriously, through this. But Oprah brought her on and was like, you gotta, you know, this is how she tried to tie it in with The Secret. Because you know what The Secret is that you think real positive thoughts and the universe gives it to you. It's the quote-unquote law of attraction. It's complete ridiculous.
They love to name make-believe laws, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, law of attraction or law of self-determinancy. I'm like, well, these are not laws.
This is what Oprah said. Now, you got to use the law of attraction to make positive things happen for you, but consider chemotherapy and surgery in that as it was attracted to you, and you
as
should use the law of action and go through with those.
Well, you know, it's funny because it's an interesting way to try to interpret your bullshit to try to make sense. The only problem is because it's bullshit, someone can turn it around and say, oh, well, no, I'm going to attract cures rather than these things because they're better. And here was the thing that she said. I mean, if you watch that video I put up, and you'll see it in the links, by the way, which I'm putting in the section again after failing to do so last show. If you watch the video, there's a couple things that she talks when she talks to Robert Young, who's, you know, doing his infomercial. And there's a couple things that really got to me. The first one was that she, you know, again, she had Googled everything. So she went through what I call kind of internet information bias. And you probably met lots of people that were conspiracy theorists or those kinds of things that you know the type. The kind of individual that decides, I'm going to hit up the internet and I'm going to find every site that agrees with everything I say. We're guilty of that as human beings in general. We all have information bias. Don't fucking kid yourself, all right? It's present, and you're not even aware of it. And even when you think you're aware of it, you're not even really aware of it. You can never really fully be aware of your own degree of bias. But you just try to compensate for it, and you hope for the fucking best, right? Unfortunately, for a lot of people, you know, especially those that are seeking something, because for her, she wanted to know the reasons for her illness. That was the second thing that she kept on talking about. I wanted to know the reason, and she went to all these doctors, and she's like, why do I have cancer? And of course, they can't give her an answer. They're serious fucking scientists and professionals, and they're not going to fucking take a guess, because there really is there's no concrete answer that's going to satisfy you at a point where you ask, why me? That's a real question she's asking. Why me? And then finally she finds a doctor. And I wish you could see my goddamn air quotes because, yeah, I'm using them. A doctor who basically says, well, there is no such thing as cancer. It is only a product of all these dietary problems that you have with your life. That your balance, your pH balance, is too much on the level of acid, and if you just compensate with alkali things, then you will work your way through any disease. Any disease. This is the claim that this man makes. Any fucking disease. There is no such thing as disease.
And at this point, in case you didn't guess it, he is not really a doctor.
No. He has a doctorate in the same kind of way that anybody who has $50 can have a doctorate. He basically conducts himself like one, and I'm sure whenever he can try to get away with it, we'll probably use that in his name.
He's being sued by several states for practicing medicine illegally.
And he probably should be sued a lot more because, you know, you don't expect this guy to be held accountable for the fact that Kim is now dead. She died 2 days ago. After the cancer got super aggressive, and because she was in fantasy denial land, it got to just ravage her in a really short period of time. That's the crazy thing, too, about breast cancer, is it moves quickly to your liver, to your bones, all kinds of places really fast.
Well, they were saying that untreated, standard length of life, 2.7 years, and she lasted 3.5. So acidosis, yay. pH balance.
The pH balance made the difference.
Mm.
And you know, usually when you die of it, it's usually a very painful process.
Yeah, well, it had metastasized into her like lungs and heart and all of her.
She had a chance. She had a chance, and she abandoned it because, and this is probably again the third thing that just fucking pissed me off, that she kept on talking about. She's like, well, when I got the answers from you, Dr. Robert Young, I felt empowered. You hear a lot of these people that just believe in woo-woo that will always use this term. I feel empowered when this happens. So What do you think the reason a person would gravitate to anything that makes them feel empowered, especially when they have something as shocking as cancer?
I don't know. Control? Oh, feeling maybe. Like you have some kind of control over your life and whether or not you're going to die or not?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, cancer can feel random, especially to some people who are like, I really lived a healthy life. I don't know why I haven't. You're just like, it's a genetic component. It could be anything. It could be fucking radon. Who knows? Sorry, life is shitty that way. And unfortunately, you know, we have this desire to believe that we're in control of things, but life is more shitty than it is good, all right, just in general. And if you feel as though you have some degree of control, you're like, oh, well, that's something that I can really easily remedy. But control is an illusion. You have it to some degree. But nature can just turn things around almost instantly. An earthquake can swallow you up. A fucking hurricane can take you away. A tsunami can drown you. And there's no afterthought. There's no like, ooh, am I going to trample on some people there? It's just like it's a force of nature that comes to obliterate you. And in this case, it's like a slow enemy of your own body, a weird byproduct of the way that cells replicate themselves. It just turns out that when it goes wrong, it goes so wrong that it just kills the host. It's not alive in a way that it has like any thought. It's just, but it's an entity, a parasite that eats away at you, and it's made of your own DNA, this fucker. So when you have to fight it, you essentially have to poison yourself. It's an enemy that's you, but not really you. It's probably the darkest thing about cancer. It's probably the reason people want to have answers. She wanted to have answers, and the fuckface gave it to her. And she's dead now. And there will always be fuckfaces that are going to give people bad information. People that are in like emotionally vulnerable states, and they just want to hear anything that's going to be comforting. She needed to hear the truth. She needed to listen to the truth, but she didn't. And you know the thing that reminded me in the one video, the part where she felt mad and angry, she's like, well, I'm not even 50 yet, and I've got so much more to do. And she probably did, but now she can't. And she can't because she listened to this bullshit. So, you know, if you wonder who's on the front lines, like I said, science-based medicine. This is a website that is on the fucking front lines of pseudoscience, and I'm sick and tired of anybody telling you, oh, like this stuff doesn't harm anybody. It's not harmful. Yes, it is. As soon as we entertain these kinds of fantasies, we open the door for just this terrible these terrible wastes of lives just because someone wanted to have an easy answer to something really complicated.
Because somebody wanted to peddle a book.
Yeah, just to peddle a fucking book. Some opportunistic guy with a creepy wife who just wants to peddle his fucking book. And he's allowed to do it. He's allowed to do it, and there's nothing we can do about it. That feels good? I hope that feels good, everybody. I don't want to leave everybody on a downer. Do we have any good news to end with? Anything good going on? Yeah, Christmas is coming, and the war on Christmas continues.
Yeah, I got nothing off the top of my head. Yeah. Oh, well, here's something. I did want to update this because it is kind of playing on that scientific riff. Remember you were talking about that new life form that they got to incorporate arsenic into its DNA?
Yeah.
There was a whole bunch of discussion on that. The scientific community is...
They said it's bullshit?
Well, this is my problem. Like, you know, whenever you read a science article, and once again, air quotes are in effect, on like MSNBC right. or CNN, where they say, like, here's a study and it says that celery does this, or having a beer is good for you, or whatever else. And you always look at it and you say, is this really what it says? Is this what it's implying? Is it cause and
effect? Is the headline not full of shit?
Did the scientists do a study and then this retarded news organization did they get causality out of it that's complete bullshit? You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, in this case, with this one, there's a whole bunch of scientists that have come out and they're refuting NASA's claims, and they're saying that there's no signs that the arsenic is actually bonded in the DNA, and it's a big back and forth, and it's really interesting because it just goes to show you that good science doesn't pretend that it for sure is right. It just says, here are our findings, continue.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's keep moving forward.
Keep moving forward, and the process itself works. If you ever wonder why like we understand so much of the world the way that we do, it's just because there's this weird process. It just kind of works. It's weird. I know I'm sure everybody harkens it to the same kind of invisible hand of the free market that some people are just like, you see, it works. That works. And you're like, well, it does work. I don't know if it has the aims that we necessarily want it to have, but it does work. It's a system that works, for sure. Science is kind of the same way, but at least its aims, I find, are a bit more positive.
Well, that's the key thing. You know, it's the difference between religion and us is that we're not dogmatic about it. And when it comes to the radio show as well, this is what I always like to say, is that we might not be right all the time, but if we're wrong, we want to correct that. We want to bring up that fact.
Yeah, and
and share the new information that we have about what could potentially be correct. We don't have any hard truths.
No,
we just have
capital T.
What we've gotten thus far.
And, well, that's almost positive. That's a good way to end the show, hey? As opposed to all the downers that we're talking about.
It was the best I could pull out of my butt.
Well, it's not always going to be a righteous show, but at least I hope you felt some of my angry rhetoric flow through you, and now you feel somehow vindicated, somehow feel better, and you're not going to punch that religious fuckface right in the mouth at your workplace who's always trying to shove religion down your face. You're going to be nice, huh? You're going to be nice out there. Because you know there's somebody who's just about to.
But you can headbutt whoever believes in the secret.
Yeah, headbutt them really hard. All right, well, again, I'd like to thank everybody who's a member. Hopefully it wasn't too painful getting you on to the new system. And if it was, just email me, let me know. You know, we're still doing some tweaks. We still need lots of feedback. We also accept positive feedback if you're really happy about the way that worked. The few out there that might be like, it was fine.
It's good to know, because if we just hear nothing, we have no idea. It could be chaos. It could be awesome. So
the next few days we'll uncover that, I'm sure. And coming up, hopefully at the end of this weekend, will be the new store. And I'm going to try to sell you the shirts that everybody was asking me. It was like, where's the store for the shirts that you talked about on all those advertising is on your show, and you're like, yeah, the store didn't work. The beauty of doing everything yourself, eh?
Yeah, it's good fun.
We suck. All right, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.